Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, what's going on? We're live on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. And this is the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and editor for the CAC on sports.com. You can find articles on boxing, golf, basketball, football, and more on the CHT on sports.com. Once again, the CHT on sports.com. Number to dial to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We have a packed show. We're going to go for about an hour tonight on the live talk. And we'll see if we could carry that over to a little bit of overtime here. But we have a lot to cover in reference to what's going on in the upcoming week, as we have gone through these fights a few times. But we're going to, you know, basically revisit or rehash them. I'm going to start off with what's going on at the MGM Grand, as you're going to have the WBO Welterweight Championship of the World on the line as the main event, as undefeated 18-0-1 WBO Welterweight Champion Jeff Horn will go up against former unified 140-pound champion Terrence Crawford, coming in there at 32. This has been a fight that was, you know, kind of like anticipated for a while now. They were talking about this fight, you know, ever since last year when Jeff Horn WBO title for the first time against Gary Corcoran over in Brisbane, Australia, when he got the TKO victory or TKO stoppage victory over Corcoran. I think Crawford was in attendance for that particular fight. They were talking about making that fight happen. They said it was going to be official. And it was at one point scheduled to happen in April, mid-April of this year, but it was, you know, basically put off to the side due to an injury of sort. And it was going to be over in Madison Square Garden. They kind of nixed all of that, put it in delay, and scheduled it for June 9th to happen at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. This will be televised on ESPN Plus. That is the, you know, on-demand ESPN network where you could pay for, you know, a month of service there on ESPN. And this, you know, I kind of see you know, this being a fairly intriguing fight here. Of course, you know, Jeff Horn did get the WBO welterweight championship by getting a decision win over Manny Pacquiao in July of last year. And, I mean, he is coming in here, you know, kind of like making a name for himself in the sport of boxing, and having that high-profile win over Manny Pacquiao kind of like changed the landscape of boxing to a certain extent. But now he's going up against Terrence Crawford, who, you know, recently unified all of the major belts in super lightweight by defeating Julius Ndongo on August 19th. He was also, you know, the WBO lightweight champion for, you know, a good amount of years from 2013 until, you know, 2014, and then moved up in 2015 to get the super lightweight championship, and like eventually 2 years later, unify all of the belts at super lightweight. And now he has his fight here against Jeff Horn, moving up in weight. He had been, you know, out of the ring for about 10 months time or so, and he seems to be, you know, a high favorite particular matchup. Going through the preview that is actually on TopRank.com. You know, it's saying that, you know, Bud Crawford is ready to take on, you know, the welterweight division. First, challenging Jeff Horn for the WBO welterweight championship. Of course, you have Jeff Horn from Brisbane, Australia, winning that fight against Manny Pacquiao. You have this fight here, promoted by Top Rank and Duco Events. You know, Duco Events there was, you know, it's basically behind Jeff Horn. And for those that, you know, may have known a little background there, you had Duco Events be part of that unification title fight between Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker. So they've been, you know, having themselves in the middle of very important fights here so far this year. And they have these, you know, these tickets are, you know, pretty good as far as like price are concerned now. I mean, you know, $500, $300, $200, $100, and $50 tickets. You can pretty much go on AXS.com to get these tickets if you're there in Las Vegas next week. They have like a you know, quote there from Bob Arum. Let's see what he says. He says, "It's exciting to see Bud Crawford move up to the welterweight division. And Jeff Horn, he fights a big, rough, tough welterweight who won the title from one of the greats, Manny Pacquiao." So I guess he's pretty much excited about that, this fight here coming up. And so it's going to be a fairly intriguing matchup. You see there that you have Terrence Crawford, like I was saying, coming up in from the super lightweight division. They're at 5'8" with a 70-inch wingspan. And you have the champion Jeff Horn there with coming in at 5'9" with a 68-inch wingspan there. Of course, Jeff Horn looks like he's going to try to, you know, make this an inside type of fight, phone booth, rough it up, rough and tumble, try to tie up Terrence Crawford to prevent him from opening up and using his, you know, multiple combinations from, you know, different positions, as you have Terrence Crawford there, who comes in as a, you know, orthodox fighter, but has had instances where he has fought as a southpaw, which, you know, I think will be incorporated in this particular fight against Jeff Horn to give Jeff Horn a different look. Even though, you know, with Jeff Horn, he did face Manny Pacquiao, who is, you know, who is a southpaw. So, I mean, I think, you know, this particular fight will have a kind of like a action feel to it. It just depends on how Terrence Crawford starts off here in this fight against Jeff Horn. And, you know, I think that, you know, many people are favoring Terrence Crawford in this particular matchup, and that he should be able to take the win here in this. So once again, you have Top Rank alongside Duco Events putting this thing together with the WBO welterweight championship on the line, with Jeff Horn defending against Terrence Bud Crawford. The co-feature bout is slated to be Antonio Maron against Jose Pedraza for a minor lightweight championship. So that is something that, you know, we're going to look at. You also do have, as part of the card, undefeated welterweight Jose Benavidez taking on Frank Rojas. Both of those guys are undefeated. So that's going to be something to look out for in this particular fight card, with Jose Benavidez seeing if he's going to, you know, up his profile a little bit with Frank Rojas. He's, you know, coming from the super lightweight division. He was the interim weight champion in 2014 and 2015, then moved up in weight to welterweight. So he's going to be campaigning in the welterweight division here, starting with Frank Rojas. You also have another fighter from Nebraska, Steven Nelson, as Steve Nelson is going to face Deshaun Webster, with Webster being at 10 wins, one loss, and Steve Nelson at 10-0. So Steve Nelson is going to be vying to stay undefeated in this particular instance. And also, you will have your young Olympic prospect Shakur Stevenson as part of this card in his seventh professional fight, going up against Elio Mesquita. No, not Mosquito, Mesquita, who is coming in at 16-1. He did lose his last fight by TKO to Nathaniel May in December of 2017 over in Brisbane. But they're lining him up to go up against Shakur Stevenson in the featherweight division. So you basically have this card that is on slate in the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas. And once again, that fight card will be on ESPN Plus. Not ESPN, but ESPN Plus. So that's going to be something there to look into or to look forward to in this particular weekend of fights. on Saturday. So went through that there real fast. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Now, another part of the day in the sport of boxing happens at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. This fight card will be televised on Showtime, as you have two fights that will be featured on this particular card. The main event is in the featherweight division, as you are going to have a rematch from a fight that happened in the Staples Center a few years ago. You have Leo Santa Cruz defending the WBA featherweight super championship against Abner Mares. And Abner Mares is the WBA regular featherweight champion, going up against, you know, Leo Santa Cruz. And this is a, I mean, it was a fairly, this is a fairly intriguing fight for some. In the fight that happened on August 29th, 2015, over at the Staples Center, you did have, you know, these two guys going at it. Abner Mares came in there as a, you know, a contender, going up against Santa Cruz, who at the time was undefeated, had the WBA Super Championship then. And it was a fight that was fairly good and fairly close for the first couple of rounds or so, you know, up until pretty, I would say, the midway point of the fight. And, you know, by that time, I would say Leo Santa Cruz was, you know, Leo Santa Cruz basically pulled away in that fight, and he eventually got the majority decision victory there over Abner Mares. And both fighters, you know, pretty much went in different directions. You know, Mares had to wait a little while before his next fight. Actually, you know, over a year until his next fight, where he fought Jesus Cuellar for the WBA featherweight championship and ended up winning that fight by split decision. Did, you know, move on and, you know, get a TKO win against Kiko Martinez, and then had his fight against Carl Frampton. You know, both guys came in there undefeated. And Carl Frampton outworked Leo Santa Cruz to get a majority decision victory. I thought it was pretty much clear. I thought Frampton was a clear winner in that particular fight. But then Santa Cruz turned around, came back 6 months later in a rematch against Carl Frampton in the MGM Grand, and was able to redeem himself from that particular fight and end up, you know, eking out the majority decision win over Frampton to get that WBA Super Championship back. And then he made a defense against Chris Avalos on October 14th. Of last year, as part of the card with Abner Mares. As you know, after Santa Cruz got that championship back from Carl Frampton, they were talking about this rematch happening. But you know, Santa Cruz was saying, "Hey, let me just, you know, get one fight first in before we have this matchup happening." And you know, Mares was like, "All right, let's go ahead and get these matches over with. And then after that, we are going to have a fight." And so in that particular card at the StubHub Center, you had Amna Mahrez get a technical decision win over Andres Gutierrez, while Leo Santa Cruz was able to get a KO victory over Chris Avalos there to assure that this match was going to happen. And, you know, right now, I mean, it seems like, you know, with the changes by Abner Mahrez, that, you know, he's kind of like looking for a different result here against Leo Santa Cruz. I think what happened in their first fight is that, you know, he wasn't able to, you know, make the proper adjustments there. But, you know, now he's, you know, kind of, you know, rolling with a, you know, basically rolling with a new trainer now. You know, I would say that he's kind of like looking to see if he has, you know, more success here. You know, when he goes up against Leo Santa Cruz, you know, he's now, you know, basically, you know, training with Robert Garcia here, and, you know, Robert Garcia is, you know, one of the most well-known trainers in the sport, one of the best trainers in the sport, and he's just seeing that, you know, he's just seeing if he's going to be able to be more successful in this particular instance. And, you know, it was looking like, you know, Robert Garcia is, you know, looking forward to this particular matchup. He's, you know, there for Abner Mahrez. He's saying that, you know, it's probably the biggest fight of Abner's career and, you know, the biggest since, you know, him and Mahrez have teamed up together, and that, you know, it's a fight that Mahrez wanted very badly. And, you know, with Garcia there, Garcia wants to win as pretty much as badly as Abner Mahrez does. He also said that, you know, he knows that it isn't going to be an easy fight, but with the way that Abner has been training and how he's been following instructions, that there's going to be a big difference in his performance come next Saturday. So that's something there that we're going to be, you know, looking into in depth out here. But while I'm continuing here with this particular fight card, I wanted to add in 202. Tell us your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, what's going on? This is World Rank. I just got a little workout in, so I'm thinking about boxing. Boxing is on my mind, so just calling to check in. I know it wasn't a lot to go on this past weekend, but just trying to catch up with you guys and schedule and things like that.
Yeah, no doubt, my man, no doubt. I just like went through a little preview about what's going down on Saturday. You do have over in the MGM Grand in Las Vegas the WBO Welterweight Championship on the line with Jeff Horn taking on Terrence Crawford. And over in the Staples Center, we have the rematch between Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Mahrez for that WBA Featherweight Super Championship. So I was just going on that a little bit.
So, yeah, those two fights, I guess they're coming this weekend, two very important fights for the division, for each division, welterweight and featherweight. The Crawford fight, Jeff Horn, you see him going on Twitter, all types of issues, with weight and things of that nature. So it's interesting to see what type of shape he's going to be in. In terms of Leo Santa Cruz and Abner Mahrez, kind of one of the fights they've been forgetting on the schedule, but it's really important towards the featherweight division. It's kind of interesting to see what the winner will do going forward. They're going to take on a real challenge, and maybe Gary Russell, or will they go to a different vault, champion or somebody over from the UK? So it's interesting to see where they go, where the winner goes for that fight.
Yeah, that's the thing there with the, with this fight between Santa Cruz and Mahrez is how will it affect the landscape of the featherweight division? We recently had the WBC featherweight championship on the line as Gary Russell Jr. was able to get the win over Joseph Jojo Diaz over in the MGM National Harbor. And, you know, Gary Russell Jr. was talking about unifying there because, you know, he had been, you know, sitting off and on for a year or so waiting for these challenges from these other title holders. And, you know, nobody was giving him a call. So he was like, well, let's see who's who else is out there. And you had Jojo Diaz there at the time, undefeated, number one contender for the WBC title. Went in there, gave him, you know, gave a good effort, but was not enough to handle the speed of Gary Russell Jr. So here with Abner Mahrez and Leo Santa Cruz, I would like to, you know, I'm interested to see what the results are going to be for this particular fight, particularly if it is Leo Santa Cruz, and see what is next in line for Santa Cruz in this particular instance.
Yeah, it's interesting to see a lot of people got different opinions on who the best featherweight is. Is it Gary Russell? Is it the winner of this fight? Is it even Carl Frampton? So it's very interesting to see, you know, again, like you said, where they go with this. Because a lot of people, it seems like the top of the division is avoiding Gary Russell. There's good reason. I mean, he's a top talent. And a lot of guys know that if they get in the ring with him, they're probably going to lose their belt. But Mahrez seems like the type of guy, if he does win, that he probably will take that challenge. Santa Cruz got a lot more to lose. I guess he's part of that higher regarded featherweight, so a lot of people probably think he might go to the Frampton fight, because that trilogy or whatever still might be there for him. Even a fight with Josh Warrington or somebody with that status to still get them some money without really taking a risk.
Yeah, I mean, Santa Cruz would be probably likely to do that. Depends on what happens here after, you know, this particular fight, you know, on June 9th. I think that, you know, over the next couple of weeks or so, we'll probably see what happens with, you know, Warrington and Carl Frampton to see if that particular does take place. You do also have, you know, the WBO title out there. So that's something that, you know, we would kind of like look towards. I mean, for me, I kind of see that, you know, with Valdez is probably going to be in line for, you know, another fight here pretty soon under Top Rank. So I don't think that Bob Arum is going to, you know, match up Valdez against somebody like a, you know, Gary Russell there in this particular instance. So he may also, I would say that, you know, Bob Arum might try to see if he could get Carl Frampton in the ring against Oscar Valdez. If he was able to get Scott Quigg to do, you know, to do it, then maybe Carl Frampton would be another, you know, fight that Oscar Valdez may be able to get there in this instance. But here with Santa Cruz and Mahrez, I just don't see, like, what else is out there in the featherweight division for them if, you know, Warrington and Frampton end up fighting each other, or Frampton ends up fighting for that WBO featherweight championship.
We do kind of keep in mind that Valdez is injured. I think he got injured in his last fight. So that's something to keep in mind. So he's probably going to be on the show for a while. But I do think Valdez has been not tough in his progression. I thought the Chavana fight was pretty tough. I thought the Quigg fight was tough. The Murrayaga fight. They haven't been, or they weren't household names, but they were tough fights. They were hard fights for him, round fights where, you know, it could have been either way. I think, I don't know if Quigg broke his chin or it was some injury that's going to have Valdez out. So But still, I think he's been challenged. He's been match made pretty right. He's been challenged with some guys who have title reigns that haven't been challenged. I do think Valdez is body tough.
Yeah. Yep. True. And I think that, you know, with Valdez, he may need like another, you know, couple of fights in to defend that WBO title against, you know, I would say, you know, a couple of other guys. So I think that, you know, with Aram in Top Rank, they're going to give him a couple of light touches out there before he gets in the ring with a, you know, a tougher opponent. He did, you know, face Genesis Savanya. He did have that fight against Miguel Mariaga and against Scott Quigg. You know, all of those fights were, you know, against guys that were highly ranked within the, you know, within the division or the WBO rankings. So with him getting through those fights, I think they're going to have him kind of like have a couple of voluntary defenses out there. So that's going to be something to look into with that featherweight division there. But you also do have, as part of that co-feature in the Staples Center, the WBC Super Welterweight Championship on the line, as Jermell Charlo will be defending that title against Austin Trout. You do have Jermell Charlo there, undefeated 30-0, was able to, you know, defeat, you know, two highly ranked contenders in the WBC rankings there. First against Charles Hadley, getting the KO win, and then against young Erickson Lubin with the first round KO victory at the Barclays Center. Well, both of those fights were at the Barclays Center. And now he's facing, you know, Austin Trout, who's going to, you know, who's a former champion there at the super welterweight division, and is, you know, once again going for a super welterweight title. He had two opportunities to get the IBF super welterweight championship, but was unable to against Jermell's brother, Jermell Charlo, in 2016. And then last October at the Barclays Center, he ended up fighting Jared Hurd for that IBF title and was stopped after 10 rounds. So this will be his third attempt to regain the super welterweight championship. And, you know, even though I see that, you know, Jermell Charlo is, you know, kind of like they put him as a smaller guy in comparison to his twin brother, Jermall, and with Jared Hurd, who is now the IBF and the WBA champion. But Jermell Charlo is like a different, you know, has been a different type of fighter, you know, since he has been with Derek James as a having Derek James as a trainer. And we saw it in his fight with Charles Hadley. And we didn't, you know, necessarily see it that much with the Erickson Lubin fight, but he was able to catch Erickson Lubin with a perfect, you know, perfect hook to the jaw that, you know, put Lubin down. And it was, you know, eventually a KO victory there, pretty much a stoppage KO victory for Jermell Charlo. So with Austin Trout, you know, we had Austin Trout here a couple of weeks ago with him preparing for this particular fight. He had been in the D.C. area for a good little while, training over at Headbangers Gym. You know, was in attendance for that Gary Russell Jr., Joseph Diaz Jr. fight card. It's just that we have to see what he's going to be able to do here against Jermell Charlo. And, you know, like I was saying before, Jermell Charlo may be the smaller guy. Some people may say he's the less skilled of the two, you know, the two brothers, but he, you know, has, like, his right hand is something that you really have to watch out for. And, you know, Austin Trout, you know, he's able to, you know, he is a, you know, good boxer, slick guy, but he's going to have to watch out for, what Jermell Charlo is going to be able to do. He's going to be the taller fighter, just like his brother. He's going to be the bigger fighter, just like his brother. And, you know, a lot of people are pretty much doubting Austin Trout getting through this particular fight. They are, like, saying that this may be, like, this might be it for him. That's what I'm getting at from this particular matchup. What do you have on this one, World Rack?
I like Austin Trout. I actually think he beat Canelo, even despite the knockdown. Even though saying that I do like him, I thought he was done when he fought Danny Dawson on ESPN, the Australian guy. He looked real bad in that fight, and at that point I thought he was done. He put in a great performance against the other Charlo brother, the bigger Charlo brother, the one who moved up the middleweight. He put a better performance than I thought he was going to. Same thing in the her fight, first half of that fight, he looked real good. He faded down the stretch, but that's expected against a big guy at the weight. I commend him for his resume, win loss. This dude is a fighter. He's a good guy in and out the ring. But I am one of those guys that's going to doubt him in this fight. I think this Charlo is going to look better than the other Charlo, bigger Charlo, the middleweight Charlo. In this fight, I expect a KO. It's strange that Trout, you know, he's given a good account for himself in these fights, but why is he still getting title shots without really, kind of regaining or just taking a tune-up? So that tells me either they're trying to cash him out because they know he's getting to the end. I just think, you know, they're trying to use him as a name. And I don't know if he's ever been stopped before. I can't remember, but maybe that's what they're trying to look at towards this Charlo to say that he was the first one to stop. Did Harris stop him? Yeah, Harris stopped him, I think. I'm not sure if it was Harris. I can't remember or not. But
Harris stopped him. They kind of didn't have Trout, you know, come out after the 10th round. So that was, you know, ruled by stop his victory.
Yeah, so, you know, they might want to do a comparison between him and her. That could be the case here, but I expect one-way traffic here. I expect Charlo to look good. I expect him to look sensational. And anything else for me would be a disappointment. And, again, I like Austin Charlo because he's a good fighter. I just think he's on the back side of his career. So, and Charlo is definitely on the upswing. So, I'm expecting a fireworks.
Yeah, that's something that I'm looking into as well here with this particular matchup is that, you know, I want to see what we're going to basically get out of Austin Trout. He did say, of course, that he's, you know, very confident in his preparation for this particular fight. But it's like you said, Jermell Charlo is like a whole different, you know, fighter now. He's been a whole different fighter since he's been with Derrick James. So I kind of expect him to utilize what Derrick James has, you know, in store against Austin Trout. They've said that he has had, you know, real intense training sessions with the IBF welterweight champion, Errol Spence Jr. So, you know that, you know, Errol Spence Jr. has been basically a dog in the ring or in the training sessions. So, you know, when he has, you know, somebody like Errol Spence Jr. there working with him, of course, you know, with Spence, you know, on his way to fighting in that next Saturday against Carlos Ocampo, defending that welterweight title, that, you know, both Spence and Charlo will be ready for their opponents. And here in this case, I just see Austin Trout as a huge, huge underdog in this particular matchup against Jermell Charlo out there. So, I mean, that's what I basically got out of that. Just for those that are listening into the Boxing Source radio show on the Golan Media channel and you want to get in on the Boxing Talk, you could call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Just knocking down all of the major fight cards that are happening on June 9th. I just went over to the fight card that was over in Las Vegas. That's going to be shown on ESPN Plus. And then over in the Staples Center, that fight card will be on Showtime. And then earlier in the day, they'll actually be over in England in the Manchester Arena. You're going to have a fight card there with the main event being the return of the Gypsy King, former unified heavyweight champion, former lineal heavyweight champion, Tyson Fury. He will be returning after a more than 2-year layoff. This time going up against Sefer Seferi. Sefer, whatever it is. I mean, who knows? Who could pronounce it? But I got it as Sefer Seferi. And he is, with Tyson Fury is just seeing here. We're kind of like looking at a couple of things here with Tyson Fury. Number one, if he is actually in shape or in ring shape, and then if that is the case, how he's going to be, conditioned there in the ring. I mean, this is like one of the, another fights that he's had against someone coming up from the cruiserweight division. We've seen him go up against Steve USS Cunningham before, with Cunningham coming up from the cruiserweight division. So here with Sefer Seferi, who is coming from Switzerland. Had like a lot of fights in various countries there, in Europe. So with Tyson Fury, it's just a matter of is he going to be in basic fighting shape for this particular matchup in order to go up against other heavyweight contenders down the line? And you also have as a part of this fight card that is by Queensberry Promotions, the vacant WBO Super Lightweight Championship that was, vacated by Terrence Crawford. You're going to have two undefeated guys going at it with Terry Flanagan taking on Maurice Hooker. Flanagan coming up from the lightweight division was the former lightweight champion there. Didn't necessarily have a fight for over a year. Having this first particular matchup for a vacant championship, going up against Maurice Hooker, 23 wins, 0 losses, 3 draws, was a, is the WBO or the NABO super lightweight champion, and also hadn't really had a fight for almost a year, too. So that's going to be something there that we have going on so far. We also have in another caller, area code 321, getting on in here while I go through that Tyson Fury, Sefer Seferi card. So, area code 321, tell us your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, what's going on, JR? It's Jay Cotto. How's everybody, man?
Hey, what's going on there, Jay? What's good with you?
Chilling, brother, chilling on this Sunday, man. Getting ready for Monday. But otherwise than that, man, I hear you talking boxing, so I had to call in to the greatest podcast, man. What's going on, brother?
Yeah, just going through this whole thing about what's going down on June 9th. I just went through the main event and co-feature that's going to be at the Manchester Arena over in England. And you do have the WBO welterweight championship on the line at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Yep. And Also, you had the WBA Featherweight Championship or the Featherweight Super Championship as the regular champion, Abner Morris, goes up against the super champion in Santa Cruz with that co-feature bout of Austin Trout against Jermell Charlo for that WBC Super Welterweight Championship. So we pretty much like covered a lot of those big events that are happening on June 9th. So what's your take on some of those fights?
Well, I know the Charlo and the Trout fight I'm waiting for. My money's on Trout. God, I don't think he's finished. Also, let me see. The Santa Cruz fight and the Mares, I got Mares. Let me see. As we go down the line, that's about it. I mean, I don't know, man. This shit, did you hear what Jeff Horn said about Terrence Crawford?
I was going to try to pull whatever I had up about what Jeff Horn said. And it was like, I think it was either early this week or sometime last week.
That is the match that I want to see. It's like, for now, for me, that's what I want to talk about. I mean, yo, this dude pissed me off, man. He pissed me off as a boxing fan in whole, not only as a Crawford fan, as a boxing fan in a whole, kid.
Yeah. The only thing I got was from that thing off the page on Top Rank where, he kind of like says that, he'll be like, he's going to be on the mission to prove doubters wrong. And he's a very competitive guy and stuff like that. But other than that, they had something on Boxing Scene where he had some, pretty interesting comments about Terrence Crawford and, what he wanted to do in the ring against Crawford.
Yeah, he also said that he feels that that Crawford's gonna come to the ring with fucking tainted gloves, bro. Okay,
oh, wow.
This guy's good. Yeah, he's talking about he's gonna come to the ring with wraps. Like who the fuck does this dirty ass fighter? First of all, let's talk about his UFC tactics. Let's talk about his headbutts. Let's talk about all them shots missed and fucking deflected in the Pacquiao fight. You know what I mean? I mean, this guy's the dirtiest fighter in the fucking world right now, like Ric Flair status, and he dares to talk shit about Terrence Crawford, the most cleanest puncher right now, okay? Sharpest puncher right now, okay? In moving up, okay? We haven't seen him in the welterweight division yet, so I'm speaking as to him in 140, but I'm just saying, man, that's some stupid, blasphemous shit to say. Especially, I mean, them accusations, man. Shit like that, bro. He got no proof to be saying no shit like that. Now, there's only two reasons why he's saying these things. And we got to look at this shit as boxing fans and as men. The first reason I feel is making up excuses already because he knows he's about to lose the crown and get that ass so deliciously beat. You know what I mean? Or it could be he's trying to get into Crawford's head. Now, we all know Crawford doesn't play games, so that head game shit ain't nothing. So I think it's him making excuses ahead of time.
Yeah, speaking of that, you do have a recent article by Keith Adek, that came earlier today in reference to the trainer of Jeff Horn in Glenn Rushton. And he says that, Rushton will try to convince, the referee there that Horn doesn't lead with his head. And he was saying that, hey, I'll certainly talk to the referee beforehand and just say, hey, by the way, Jeff doesn't lead with his head. He leads with his legs, and the head just happens to be attached to his body, so it naturally comes with you. Jeff never tries the head, but he's a great competitor and always sticks to the rules of boxing, and that's what he'll be doing again on that night.
brother, I tell you right now, man, the way I see this fight going out is Jeff Horn's going to try the roughhouse tactics, you know what I'm saying? He's going to try the clinching, he's going to try the inside, and he's just going to get a boxing clinic. He's going to get Gamboa'd. He's going to get postalled. he's going to get beat the fuck up, bro. And I just can't wait to see that delicious defeat handed to Jeff Horn. Now, it has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with his country, you know, in Australia. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with him having a big fucking mouth, okay? And him actually saying that he actually beat Manny Pacquiao when we all seen the fucking fight.
Yeah, we saw it, and we saw what happened, you know, in that particular round where he got beaten pillar to post, where, you know, the fight could have been stopped and whatnot, and that he came out for that next round, and he really didn't do that much, but folks were talking about, oh, we made a serious comeback or something like that, and I'm like, yeah, I didn't see much of a comeback, though. You know, so that, I mean, that's what I basically got out of it is that, you know, he was able to get a controversial win over Manny Pacquiao or something like that. And I think, you know, that was basically a cash out move of sorts. That's what I pretty much got out of that. Now your thoughts about that Mahrez Santa Cruz fight, you're picking Mahrez. Is the change in trainers a factor in that particular decision?
I think so, and also this is the second fight that they're going into, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel that Marvis has matured and he's been hard at work. I'm not sure. I mean, see, I'm one to look at fighters when they're like in training camp and shit. And when I saw Santa Cruz about what I think it was 2 months and a half ago, enter, he looked butter soft. Like, you know, he's supposed to look cut up and chiseled. Now, when you're cut up, it means that, you know, you're training. You know, you keep him busy. It looks like he was just laying back for a bit. Wasn't, you know what I mean? And it's just to me, he got comfortable as I was looking at Mahrez is gonna look spectacular. And you know, he's just been hard at work, and I don't think he overtrained for this fight. I don't think he has. This is exactly why. Also, the trainer as well. You know what I mean? This trainer has put sort of like a mean streak into Mahrez. I think I was listening to one of his interviews last week, and he said some things, man. He's going in there to hurt him. He's going in there to hurt Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, to me, I said this last time. I was wrong. I felt last time he was limited. I think in this fight, he's going to show us that he's limited.
Yeah, I mean, to me, with Santa Cruz, is that, you know, he has the height and he has, like, activity, but there's times where he has lapses. And I think that, yeah, you know, basically happened in that first fight that he had against Carl Frampton. And he basically allowed Carl Frampton to outwork him.
Hell yeah.
He allowed Frampton to limit the output that he usually has in his fights. And so, you know, with that, that's why he was, you know, that's why he ended up losing that particular fight. I thought it was like a clear, to me, it was more of a clear victory there than the judge kind of indicated. I thought that, you know, Frampton was basically the better fighter from, you know, the course of that particular fight. But he was able to get that back in the rematch there. So I just don't think that there has been many changes coming from Leo Santa Cruz. And if, you know, Robert Garcia is able to give Abner Mahrez the proper adjustments, then, you know, he may be able to squeak out that particular fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel the same way. You know, like I said, you know, he's got more now in his arsenal. So let's see exactly what he's going to bring, man.
Yeah, true that, true that. All right, we got about a little bit over 5 minutes left in the live show. If y'all want to get in before the live session is over, you could call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. You know, here, from now until a little bit of overtime, we're just going to go through a few news and notes. Just wanted to get this in before the overtime session. What we got in earlier today from the UK is WBO middleweight champion Billy Joe Saunders made an announcement on Twitter, and he says, I apologize for any inconvenience, but due to injury, I had to withdraw from the fight against Martin Murray that was coming up on the 23rd. And, you know, this is like the second time that Billy Joe Saunders has been, saying that he's pulled out from a fight. I was like, you know, basically, what was that? I was like at work, a few months ago, Like it was March. Yeah, it was March when, you know, I first found out that Saunders had pulled out for the originally scheduled fight against Murray. And then now here we are, you know, on June 3rd and a few weeks away from the scheduled fight, and Billy Joe Saunders pulls out yet again. And now it seems like it's a little bit more interesting because within the boxing world and within boxing circles, the rumors are going around and going around and going around that the reason that he's pulling out is not due to injury, but because he may have a much bigger fight on the horizon. And that fight may happen on September 16th. If I'm not mistaken, if that's the date on September, it'll be September 15th. So he may be scheduled for something on September 15th of this year. And so that's been the internal buzz right there. So first, I'm gonna get 202 in here. What's your reaction to this now latest announcement of Billy Joe Saunders pulling out?
Of course, nobody really cared about Martin Murray and Billy Joe Saunders. But to me, there's a small place in my heart for Martin Murray because I think he should have been the middleweight champion. I think he beat Sergio Martinez way back when. People seem to forget that. He's not the same. Obviously, he's not the same fighter 5 or 6 years now. You know, so in that sense, I feel kind of sad for him because this probably was his last big fight. I think Eddie Hearn dropped him, so I don't think he has a big promoter. So I'm thinking he was trying to cash out on this fight with Billy Joe. So I feel bad for him in that way. But in terms of the fight, it really had no meaning because he's trying to keep Billy Joe busy. In terms of the September date, I hope it's Billy Joe. I'd rather see him than see Spike O'Sullivan. So I don't want to see punching bags. I do want to see a competitive fight. So if Billy Joe is fighting Canelo or whoever in September, I'm up for it as long as it's not Spike O'Sullivan.
Yeah, I would be up for it too. I mean, you don't want to have, you know, Canelo Alvarez fighting a Spike O'Sullivan, up against, B.P. Smith, Liam B.P. Smith, that time for that WBO Super Welterweight Championship, and then ended up, you know, relinquishing it not that long after. So we don't necessarily want the actions of the cereal box fighter to go that route, fighting Spike O'Sullivan, but, you know, have a big matchup against Billy Joe Saunders, particularly we didn't have something on Cinco de Mayo weekend, first time that that's happened in 10 years. All right, so Jay Carter, what do you have to say about Billy Joe Saunders pulling out here and his possible matchup with Canelo Alvarez?
listen, guys, I gotta say, man, I'm peace of the other fellow, man, that's on the panel, man. Peace to you, my brother. Blessings. I just gotta say, man, listen, I don't give a fuck what Canelo and who Canelo's gonna fight. Fuck Canelo. As far as I'm concerned, Canelo is a fucking golden bitch. He's supposed to be fucking penalized, okay? Just like everyone else, and he's not. So I don't give a shit. Now, Billy Ho Saunders, he fucked up, man. You know, he's supposed to fight Martin Murray. That's the way it's supposed to go. All of a sudden, you got a pulled hamstring. No doubt that's from you bending over and kissing ass. No doubt. It's all good. You know what I mean? You're going to fight Canelo. It's all good. Fight fucking Canelo. All right? But the thing here is, it's not going to really fucking matter. It really doesn't matter. I still feel that the way they're pushing Canelo and they're just giving him this little slap on the finger, not even the fucking wrist, it's a shame. It's a shame to boxing, Golden Boy. I don't think anybody should follow him. I'm sorry, Linares. You're a great fighter. Maybe go to Top Rank or something. But, yo, don't follow. Fuck Golden Boy. This is bullshit. This is an injustice to Martin Murray, who deserves, you know what I'm saying, well deserving of this. And especially for the sanctioning bodies to allow this to just happen just like that, it's a bunch of bullshit. Shame on them as well. They're supposed to keep this competitiveness going, like you said, JR, a little bit earlier, before I got on right now, a couple of seconds ago, you know, the cereal-faced boxer, this is exactly what fucking Billy Joe Saunders does, you know, and he almost had it. He almost had it. He just got out of a great fighter, Lemieux, and I knew he was gonna dim his star, bro. I knew he was gonna dim his own fucking shine within his star because of a fucking move like this. So now you're going to boost, after all this shit talking, you're going to boost Canelo Alvarez and Golden Boy after they shunned you out. You know what I'm saying? You showed up at their press conference, the first Canelo and Triple G post presser. You came up, they embarrassed you, you didn't matter. Now you're trying to, okay, no doubt, every man has a right to make themselves matter. But the way you're doing it, it's fucked up. You're helping a very, very fucked up situation here. And Canelo Alvarez should not even be fighting. He's not even going to make $40 million. I don't think after this, Canelo makes any more fucking money. And I hope that for Billy Joe Saunders' sake, I hope he boxes his fucking ears off. I hope he moves. I hope he stays evasive. I hope he fights him the same way he fought fucking Lemieux. But the thing is, Canelo got hands too. You can't sleep on Canelo. You know what I'm saying? So Canelo got a fucking, you know what I'm saying? He needs to be penalized, man. I'm sorry. I just feel very disrespected as a fight fan. And, you know, Golden Boy to me ain't shit. I'm sorry, Golden Boy to me ain't shit. As far as I'm concerned, this allows other fighters. This is why Billy Joe Saunders don't fucking matter. You know, unless he's fighting Triple G, you know, to help with unification. This is exactly why. You know, that's how I feel. You know, that's how I feel. I just feel that these fucking guys helping this guy out. And just straight allow, this is going to allow everyone to say, I ate tainted meat. What's next? What's fucking next? Tainted fruit or some shit? Like, come on, man. You know?
Hey, Jake Toto, can I be devil advocate for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
So
yeah.
If I'm your lawyer and you might committed a crime, even though if I know that you committed that crime, my job is to be on your side. So I understand your angriness at Golden Boy for standing up for Canelo, which Canelo doesn't even think that Golden Boy did stand up for him. Now, whoever gave him the ban, the six-month ban, those are the people that we should be angry at. We can't be angry at his promoter because his promoter works for him. Their job is to look out for him despite his wrongdoing. The sanctioning body, which you said, I agree, they should be at fault too. But the people who put the ban in place, and we ought to understand, and this is what I talked about a while ago, Canelo is the cash cow. They will look after him. And when we talked earlier about Trout, I thought Trout won that fight. And you can go through several times where Canelo got questionable scorecards on different fights, depending on who you thought won. It's at least three or four fights. He brings money, and when you talk money, you know, everything else is just irrelevant. He's the guy that brings the cash to the table, right or wrong or fair. There's people that's going to back him no matter what. And it's just like, and again, I'm with your frustration. I think he's getting too much credit for a lot of stuff because he is the golden child. But I don't think it's Golden Boy's fault or his fault for him being just slapped on the wrist. I don't know if it's Nevada State Athletic Commission or whoever the commission is that suspended him. Anybody else would have had that, did what he did, would have got 2 years, a year, or whatever. He basically got his, took him all the way down for 6 months. And the only reason why I think he got 6 months is everybody, like you said, everybody knew it would have been a sham if he would have just got off. Because I think, really, they would have let him go, but it would have been too much of a sham that they had to throw something on him. So they gave him 6 months where anybody else would have had 2 years.
I understand exactly what you're saying. But my frustration is totally different. I understand this. I understand with the lawyer bit that you was just saying. Now, understand now, no doubt, lawyers always defend rapists, murderers, right? Murderers and shit, no doubt. But at the same time, it's dangerous for society. So Canelo Alvarez, therefore, is fucking dangerous for any fighter that's going to face him. And these guys are going to allow him to test 30. Now, I'm not sure if you knew, but he also said that before they even suspended him, he said that they did suspend him. He said that he wasn't going to even test. And this was before he signed to that bullshit clean boxing program that doesn't really matter. Peace to Errol Spence Jr. for not joining, because I understand exactly where he's coming from. You know what I'm saying? They're going to let motherfuckers slide anyway. And he's going to get tested regardless. Any fighter is going to get tested regardless before the fights. So it really doesn't matter about that clean boxing bullshit. They're very selective on their penalties and everything. Canelo's a perfect example. Now, he's a menace to everyone in that fucking ring. He's disrespecting his fellow brother within the ring. He's endangering people's lives. You know what I mean? And this is exactly why Oscar De La Hoya, who used to be an advocate for that, and swears he still is, right? Right? And since he's an advocate, and since he's speaking about clean boxing program, then why the fuck is he not pushing for a harder penalty then? Because it's all bullshit. That body shit don't test. It don't test at all. That shit is bullshit. So this is exactly why Oscar De La Hoya as well should, you know, and Golden Boy are fucked up and part of this. And they are the fucking blame. You know what I'm saying? A promoter does what a promoter does. Promotes the fighter. But now, you know, he's fucked up. And you know, the name, which is what's going down. Canelo's stock is not going up. It's not going up. It's possibly going to either stay the same or go down. Most likely go down because of his dishonesty and the way he treated us as boxing fans. You know what I mean? But I understand exactly what you're saying.
So
that's my frustration.
So to piggyback on that, Golden Boy is not going to let their cash cow be unhappy. Golden Boy, if you look at their stables, there is really nothing but Canelo. Maybe Ryan Garcia, the prospect that they're trying to hype up, who hasn't fought anybody. But the Mexican market is where it's at. Besides Canelo, if you look at Golden Boy's roster, there is no one there. So they have to do everything in their protection, because they don't care about the B side who they're fighting. They don't care about Billy Joe Saunders, whoever, Triple G, whoever the opponent is. They don't care. They care about their investment, and their investment is Canelo and trying to make money off of him going forward. He took a hit, no doubt. He's not as high as he's going to be, but he's still the number one HI in the sport that's active right now, and Golden Boy has that. If they don't have him, they don't have nothing else. So they have to look at their investment and say, hey, we have to do everything we can to protect this guy, because he is our company right now, and he's the guy that's keeping us afloat. He's the only guy that's making money for them as a fighter, period, as of right now. So Oscar can say all this stuff when he was a fighter, but now he's in a different he's in a business sense now where he has to make business decisions. And again, everything comes down to money. So they're going to make a choice based on the dollars, not on what makes sense for the fighters. And that's just what it is.
Well, I see it like this. I want to hear you say the same thing after he fights in September, when he doesn't produce the same $40 million that Oscar De La Hoya is swearing that he's going to make, because that's not going to happen. You know what I mean? So as to keeping their cash cow happy, it's now Canelo has put himself in this position a long time ago, about 5 years ago, where he allowed Golden Boy to make his fights, not him make his own fights, which is what's really going, what should be going on. That your promoters work for you, not you work for your promoters, right? Or your promoters tell you what to do, right? So I want to hear the same thing if he generates, you know what I'm saying? If he's not going to generate that, I guarantee you that. You know what I mean? So keeping their investment happy. But now, what happens when their investment doesn't keep them happy? You see what I mean?
I'm just playing
devil's advocate here. You know what I'm saying? You got to ask yourself that question now. You know what I'm saying? What happens when the cash cow doesn't bring in that money? What does Oscar De La Hoya then do? See, that's why they've been campaigning and throwing this little fucking schmuck as well that's been talking the massive shit, Ryan Garcia, in front of everybody. They know Canelo's on the fucking way out. You know what I'm saying? They just bought the title, and they're stable to a great pound for pound that we can call now Lomachenko, which is Lazarus. You know what I'm saying? They just lost the title. So the Golden Boy is falling. Canelo's stock has fallen. Don't think that Golden Boy and Oscar and anybody else that's over there, even Canelo, doesn't, you know what I'm saying, remain unscathed after this computer all testing positive shit. Listen, there are a lot of fight fans that everybody knows. Everybody knew Canelo was on something. It just took this to happen. Just because he signed into the program don't mean shit. Now, if you really take a look at it, the reason why he signed was simply because he was pushed to sign. Because they said, okay, we're going to give you 6 months, which should be more, but we give you 6 months, but you have to sign. Notice, he was all braggadocious. I'm not signing anything. I'm not signing anything, and I'm not going to test until maybe a week after the fight. About, you know what I'm saying? Like having his way. The WBC was letting him have his way. The WBC, VADA, everybody in Vegas, everybody's there. They're all together. All that shit is together. Golden Boy, they work together. You know what I'm saying? It's not like a new thing. This is not a conspiracy. This is the truth. Golden Boy, the WBC, which favors Golden Boy, which Suleiman is always kissing Oscar De La Hoya's ass. We all know this. And if you notice this, the WBC is always making a fucking title for a fucking Golden Boy fighter, no matter who the fuck he is. A title for the bathroom, a title fucking stirring beans. I mean, come on, bro. No sense. So I want to hear exactly what you're saying, and I will agree with it if he generates the $40 million, you know what I'm saying, which he thinks that he's going to, which he's not going to without Golovkin, because Billy Joe Saunders doesn't sell.
I agree. I agree with everything you're saying, other than the $40 million part. Now, he's not going to get $40 million, but $20 million is still the number one guy in the United States. If you can do a half, what do you do? 400,000 or 325? I don't know the exact numbers, but it was like either between 325 and 450, somewhere in that range. With Liam Smith, this guy is going to do business. And I know he just had the meat thing, but Mexican-Americans love boxing, or Mexicans, period. They love boxing. There are people that's going to be diehard Canelo fans no matter what. Yeah, there's going to be guys who are hardcore fans like me and you that are going to say Canelo is not going to get our dime, and he's a cheater, he's this, he's that. But there are loyalists, and there's a lot of them, that's going to back Canelo in this situation and just back Canelo blindly. That demographic is the number one demographic for the sport. They're going to curry Canelo.
Right, and then you know what's going to happen to that demographic? That demographic is going to change into the demographic of the hardcore and the rulings and the followings, which it should be, you know what I'm saying? Once again, competitiveness. You know what I'm saying? They're tired of putting the fucking guy's name in front of titles, in front of fights that are supposed to happen. Rank fightings, mandatories. What Canelo is doing, same thing Adrian Broner, everybody else is trying to do, put their name up there in front of the sport, and that's failing, brother. It's failing. You know what I'm saying? Canelo, if he makes $20 million, $15 million, it's not acceptable, because Oscar's going around, okay, bashing Gennady Golovkin, talking about make your $1 million fighting Derevchenko. You know what I'm saying? Meanwhile, we're going to make $40 million. That's what he said, $40 million. So we have to hold him to that standard. I don't give a fuck if he makes $20 million, $15 million. You have to make that $40 million. You know why? Because they're holding themselves up to the same standard that they said that they always were. They're saying they're innocent. They've been proven guilty time and time again. So we have to hold them to that standard. So it's either $40 million or Canelo Alvarez, the stock falls. There's no double standard here. There's no favoritism here for no fighter. My fighter, your fighter, anybody's fighter. If you're going to hold yourself up to that fucking standard, then goddammit, Let's hold them up to that standard with a fucking steel ladder now. You know what I'm saying? We just can't backtrack now and say, oh, well, if he makes 20 mil, it's still good. And he's, of course he's going to have a demographic. No shit. Of course there's always going to be dummies that are going to follow the fucking lies, you see? But when their fighter can't get a title shot, like when they fuck up, like they have with a major title shot that could have been unification for Canelo fucking stupid Carrot Top Alvarez, the way he fucked up by cheating, and when he got caught, what happened? Now the fan base is disappointed. Now they look, oh shit, he is a fucking cheater. This guy can't even get a fucking title shot. What happened? This is exactly what's going to happen. This is exactly what's happening. Notice how, and I've been calling this shit out about 3 years ago, unification. It's all about unification. Where does unification come from? It don't come from the prize fighter. It comes from the legacy fighter. The legacy fighter who wants to collect all the titles and say, I fucking am in this fucking division. That's exactly what's happening now because of the fucking Mayweather politics that are watered down. All that shit, your name bigger than the sport, that shit is no good. It never worked. There was one man that gimmicked it, two men that tried to gimmick it. There's still a man here from the Philippines that is still trying to live off his fucking name correctly because he's fought hard enough, and we're not let, well, not we, some are not letting him. So people should just take a fucking step back and understand that there's a double standard when it comes to Canelo Alvarez and fighters like that. When they're trying to fucking put their name in front of the fucking sport, in front of titles, or in front of any fucking ranked fighter that comes before their bullshit cinnamon toast crunch fighter that they're ready to fucking fight, that they didn't even fucking deserve to be putting on the fucking pair of gloves against them. But at the same time, maybe he does deserve to put the fucking pair of gloves against him because he's a fucking joke. That's all I got to say.
Well, the thing with Canelo Alvarez and his relationship with the WBC. I mean, you've gone through it. He's basically had the WBC cater to him over the past few years. We've had the example where, you know, even with him, you know, relinquishing the belt and whatever, and that, you know, he relinquished the belt, you know, vacated it, and then he comes back that next year and they basically create, you know, a you know, for his fight against Little Chavez, and he wasn't having it. But, you know, he was still able to, you know, fight Gennady Golovkin that first time. And even with that fight against Gennady Golovkin, he didn't want to fight for the WBC championship then. He was like, yep. He wanted to fight for all of those other titles. And the WBC championship, he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to fight for that title. So if I win this particular fight, and they're not going to, you know, I'm not going to take their belt. It's going to be vacated if I win. And so now here we are almost, you know, 6 months after that, and the WBC is still catering towards Canelo Alvarez and not really saying much about you know, Gennady Golovkin is basically going to do here in this particular case. So that kind of like shows, you know, what the WBC's intentions are in catering to specific fighters. And that's pretty much what I got on that. You know, we're deep into the overtime section of the show. I just wanted to get in one little thing here before I close out, and that is the ongoing saga between two heavyweights, Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder. The latest thing here is that, you know, negotiations are going back and forth and whatever it is between Eddie Hearn and Al Haymon. I want to make this clear. Negotiations are still going on between Eddie Hearn and Al Haymon. Not Deontay Wilder and Eddie Hearn. Not Shelley Finkel, or like Eddie Hearn likes to say, Shirley Winkle and Eddie Hearn, but Al Haymon and Eddie Hearn. And the thing with Anthony Joshua is, as the unified heavyweight champion of the world, his intention for this particular fight, his first fight, is that he doesn't matter he doesn't mind. I mean, if there is a rematch, and that rematch clause has the second fight in the U.S., but he is adamant that the first fight between those two has to be in the U.K. It
okay.
has to be in the U.K. There's no, you know, other way around it. And
okay.
all it is for Deontay Wilder to basically accept that particular, you know, detail about this fight.
That's
whole
it?
Thing about
That's
$50 million. This whole thing about $50 million is still being bandied about. And I've said it before, and I've said it again. You cannot, or you have never seen a boxer offer another boxer a contract.
$50 million.
Never.
That's right. That's right. Never.
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 Al Heyman,
never.
Al Heyman himself did not say anything in reference to an offer, a counteroffer to Anthony Joshua. He never said it. You don't see it anywhere. You haven't seen it anywhere now. It only
nope.
came from. It only came from what Anthony Joshua said when he said on camera. He said, "Well, if folks actually dollar fight, I want them to offer me $50 million, and then I'll sign the fight tomorrow." And then Eddie Hearn basically said, while he was going to be in the U.S., pretty much days after that video came out, he was going to be in the U.S., he wanted to meet with Al Heyman, and he wanted to meet with Deontay Wilder and his representatives, but he wanted to meet with Al Heyman. Wednesday, that Wednesday was when Deontay Wilder put out that video and said, "Hey, 50, the money's in the bag. What are you gonna do? You have to..." "Well, we have the $50 million, and you have 24 hours to sign." And then Thursday comes around, and then we get nothing out of that.
Nothing.
Eddie Hearn's in New York City. He has a press conference there, you know, over in, you know, Park Avenue at the Mondrian Hotel. And
yep.
now that deadline changes from 24 hours to 48 hours. I'm like, okay. Then after that, Friday comes along, and Shelly Finkel says, "Well, there's no reason for us to meet if we can't really get Anthony Joshua to agree to sign to an email or an offer." So we heard nothing from Al Heyman, who is the one that actually has the wherewithal or the power to bring or get that money, if he has that money. So these other people are talking about saying that, well, hey, the $50 million is there or whatever it is. That's basically coming from Al Heyman after the fact. There was nothing that was discussed during that week when Deontay Wilder made that video, because when Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua wanted to know more about it, they got nothing. Nothing. So
right.
if they were really serious then the fight would have been signed already with that $50 million guarantee. That's number one. And then number two, while I was there that week covering that Daniel Jacobs Moncey Selecki fight, no one really that was in the media circle said that Deontay Wilder against Anthony Joshua is a $100 million fight. It's not one that will pull in that much revenue. If you pull in $100 million, that means you're approaching top five highest grossing fights in boxing history, which both of these guys aren't that well known to even bring something like that to the table. So that is where that begins. That's where it should end. But of course, on Facebook, the entertainment continues, the comedy continues, and I have to, you know, feed into the comedy. So I dedicated a week of Deontay Wilder Hater Week, where I basically have some fun, poke some fun with Deontay Wilder and add a little facts into it. So that's pretty much what I got on that, and the update in reference to the ongoing back and forth between unified heavyweight champion Anthony Joshua and WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder. And so that's what I got. World rank, what are your thoughts about what's been going on back and forth between those two? And, of course, I'm having fun with it because I basically know what is going to actually end up happening anyway. Yeah, World Rank, you in? Oh, I'm not sure if he is. Hey, Jay, you can see if you could put something into this.
Me, bro, I just think that this whole shit is silly. We all know where it comes from. You know, there are certain factions that are, you know, that have been created because of this stuff. And now some of them are feeling like, you know, this guy has betrayed them because he represented Jack Johnson and then he shook, Trump's hand. And just a bunch of bullshit. I think this was meant to be played out like this. I think this fight should be made somewhere in August. It's fucking silly, bro. It's silly. They're going to announce this fight in August. Mark my words. It's going to be dragged out a little bit more. They're going to juice this politically simply because England's going through some shit. We're going through some shit. So when this fight bumps head, it's going to be basically the two countries going through some shit and who's going through the worst shit. And whoever wins is going to be the fucking heavyweight champion of the worst going through shit country. You know what I mean? So that's basically how I see this fight. I mean, I lost love and friction for this fight a while back. And I learned this from the Maypac experience. I've learned this from other fights that have been just basically procrastinated by, you know, poor promoting, you know, and it's not basically both promoters' fault. It's always that one promoter that got to fuck shit up. So it's like I'm sick of it. You know, if these guys are going to fight, you're going to make this fight. You guys are going to do your jobs professionally. Make this fucking fight. No excuses. You know what I mean? And now that you just mentioned that all he has to do is just agree, okay, well, you fight me here in my home, you know what I mean? And then after that, you know, the rematch, if you beat me, you know what I'm saying, I'm going to come to your home and take it. Bottom line, simple, it's a fair trade. And if the money's good, what's the fucking problem? This is exactly why I respect Shannon the Cannon Briggs when he told him in his face, Deontay Wilder, that is, they gave you those belts.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? They gave you those belts. And I respect Shannon Briggs, man.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the thing, man. He basically told him that, yeah, it gave Deontay Wilder that belt because, I mean, we had it, you know, after a good amount of time where, you know, Vitaly Klitschko had been, you know, retired and relinquished that WBC belt. They didn't really make any decisions on who would fight for the belt. And then they just made the decision for a rematch between, you know, Ramon Severn and Chris Areola for that belt. And then after that, the WBC made the decision to have a so-called mandatory between Malik Scott and Deontay Wilder when probably neither one of them had that, you know, type of status to have a mandatory fight against each other. And we all saw what happened with Malik Scott there in that instance. So those that know, know. And then, you know, by July of 2014 was when they were supposed to have that particular fight, you know, be negotiated in order to be made, and it wasn't made. They had another mandatory fight with Brian Jennings winning that particular fight. So Brian Jennings was out there as, you know, a second mandatory or whatever it is. So first it took 3 months for the WBC to have Deontay Wilder fight Ramon Severn for that WBC heavyweight championship. And then by the time that it was made, you know, Brian Jennings couldn't wait, you know, any longer. So he went ahead and fought Vladimir Klitschko for those other belts. You see? So, I mean, the WBC has been, you know, all about their BS. And they've been protecting guys. You were saying that they've been catering to Canelo. And it looks like to me they've been catering towards Deontay Wilder because other than his fight against Ramon Sebrun when he wasn't mandatory, and his fight against Luis Ortiz, he had not fought one fighter that was within the top five in the WBC rankings. Not one. Not one. And to me, that to me is inexcusable. When you have guys out there that have WBC titles that have been criticized much more than Deontay Wilder has in Adonis Stevenson, and Stevenson himself has actually fought guys that are higher ranked in the light heavyweight division and in the WBC rankings than Deontay Wilder. So for, you know, Wilder to basically go through what he's been able to go through. And you know, basically get away with it, that is something that needs to be called into question. And it's something that says, well, if he is the guy that he says he is, he would have unified a long time ago. If he was the guy that he says that wanted to unify, he would have unified in 2016 against Charles Martin. If they say that they have an offer for $50 million or anything close to that, then why couldn't he offer for a fight against Charles Martin to unify the belts or offer money towards Vladimir Klitschko for them to the fight for the WBC and then at that time the vacant WBA Super Championship? So all of this talk about them having money when they've never had any instance taking place makes me say, hey, something's up, something's wrong, and something's fake. So either they don't have the money or they're lying on the books. And I'm putting that out there. Either they don't have the money because you cannot tell us 1.2.
Yep, I hear that.
$1 million against Luis Ortiz, with Luis Ortiz having $500,000. You're going to tell me that 3 months after that, that they could come up with $50 million, bare minimum. That's a minimum of $50 million towards one particular fighter that they don't even promote, that they don't even manage, that they don't even put up fights for. Come on.
Yep, that's crazy. That's
logic to me.
That's fucking nuts.
Yeah. So that's what I had on that one, man. I'll pretty much like put in a close to the show. Is there anything that you wanted to say there, Jake Cardo?
No, that's about it, man. Just thank you, you know, for having me once again, man. I'm sorry I called in a little late, man. I catch everybody on Instagram and on Facebook, man, but mostly on Instagram.
Folks, catch Jake Cardo online there at Jeff Cardo 1013 on Instagram. He has live videos on Instagram Monday through Friday. So he talks about boxing every weekday around that time. So be sure to catch that. And also Jeff Cardo on YouTube, where he has those things. And here for social media, The Boxing Source, you just look for The Boxing Source on social media and you'll be able to find it, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram, you know, or Twitter. You'll be able to find The Boxing Source there. So on that note, put in the close to the end of the show. Catch our sister shows, the Cohort Trooper on Sports Tuesday night at 8:30 p.m. And we had Take This L earlier this week, so be sure to go on the Golong Media channel and catch the podcast of that, where we went through, you know, a little bit of NFL and college football talk right there. And like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is a hit, and I get hit. Not the same in trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everyone.
Peace.